I've been preaching very recently on spiritual warfare and the importance of getting our beliefs right. What we believe about who we are in Christ and our own identity is important, and it's the basis of our relationship with God, and it's where we get our confidence from in terms of being able to defend ourselves against attack. The question is, do we really know who we are in Christ, and do we use that to rely on our defense? Or is the devil able to influence our thoughts and chip away at our confidence? You see, if our belief in our identity is wrong, our confidence is going to be attacked, because I think particularly today there's a lack of focus and knowledge about who God is. And I think that affects the way that we behave. So today, I've just got one final belief that I think will really give you a solid grounding in spiritual warfare. And I want to talk about the sovereignty of God. Now, the sovereignty of God isn't a secondary issue. It's not something that is kind of unimportant. It's completely foundational to everything else that we stand on, what we believe about God. And we can find that some of the things that we believe don't match up with what the Bible says, and we've got a problem when that happens. So for the sake of time, I can't go into every area of the teaching on the sovereignty of God. But when I say sovereignty, I'm referring to our God who is all-knowing, in total control, and has the absolute right to do all things according to his good pleasure. You see, if we don't believe fully that God is sovereign, how can we trust him? And I want to start with something that I've heard a few times, and I just think it's plain wrong. The technical word for it, the Bible scholars would call it the dominion of Satan. And the idea is that God has given Satan this world, and he is in charge of this world. He created man and gave him total dominion over the earth. But that Satan deceived man into sinning and took that off him, took that authority off him. And now Satan is in total control and has total dominion on the earth. And God is kind of looking in and is able to interfere sometimes. That is not biblical. You hear it in all kinds of teaching today. There are some variations. Some say that God has deceived Satan out of it again through Jesus. Some believe that Satan still has control. It's not biblical. For one thing, man never had ownership of this world. He was a steward. God has always owned this world. He still owns this world. We are a caretaker of God's creation. Ownership belongs to God, and it always did. In Psalm 50, verse 12, God says, "The world is mine and all its fullness." And that's a sweeping, big picture statement. It's telling us, under everything else that we believe, that the world is God's. Everything was his creation. The words that I read this morning, that Jesus was that he was created first, and everything was created for him. The world was created for him. He goes first in everything. And in a little detail, that's the sweeping big picture, but in a little detail, God provides the children of Israel the inheritance of their promised land. You know the story. He made it clear that it belonged to him, and he was entrusting it to him. You remember that you won't remember probably, but the land rules in Leviticus, how land belongs to someone. It had to remain in the family, you know. That land could be sold to somebody else. But in the Jubilee year, it had to return to the original family, because there was this sense of we are tenants, that God owns everything, and there's no permanence in ownership. So right through the Bible, in the sweeping big picture, but also in the little details, we see that God is sovereign. God also says at that time that if he warned them, that if they abandoned him and rejected his commandments, he'd drive them out of the land. And to abandon God is to abandon God's blessings. The blessings belong to God, and they're enjoyed in fellowship with him. That was the nation story of Israel. The sovereignty of God is not a dispute over doctrine. It's a foundational issue. We have to make sure that we understand it and we believe it. Not just that we quote Bible verses, but really deep down in our souls, we understand that God has total authority, that he is in charge. Because it's only when we stand in awe of God that we can understand that God is able to make your path and design it perfectly. It's only when we can have total confidence that God is in charge that we can trust him 100%. So I've got 4 points that I just want to outline for you, because I believe that once you understand that God is in total control, that he's got a plan for your life, that you'll be able to walk with him more effectively. So the four points are going to spell out the word plan, because God does have a plan for your life. The first word is plan. God has a perfect plan for each one of you. Now, how many people here have gone through a season where it doesn't feel like there's a plan for your life? You felt a little bit rudderless. You're not in control. I think it's a normal human reaction. We don't always feel that life is going the way we want it to go. Nobody has ever felt that. We get tempted to step outside of God's will and abandon his plan, particularly when it's hard. But every step we take out of God's will, and I've done this myself, I've tried to put my own plans in place, we fall short of God's perfect plan and design for our lives. Jeremiah 29:11 is going to be the obvious verse that I was bound to go to today when I'm talking about plans. God says, "For I know the plans that I have for you, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future." You know, many people are afraid of God's plans and they're unwilling to let go of their life. But you know what? From a deep heart of longing, Jesus cried out to show his mercy. He said, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stone those who sent her. How often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing." That's the heart of God right there, isn't it? Jesus cries out with a passion for you. The same cry that he calls out over Jerusalem is cried out over your life. God calls, "How long to gather you under my wings? How long before I can fulfill my purpose in your life? But will you come?" A lot of people don't. We're unwilling to sacrifice our own desires, even when we see what happens in the lives of the people that do give everything to God. When we don't believe God's plan is perfect, the road starts to get rocky. We don't trust him to fulfill us. We also don't trust him to get through trials. And that's where Satan comes in. He uses trials to discourage us, to put us off. Now, I've said this many times, but we have to keep reminding ourselves that as Christians, we're not promised that life will be pain-free, unfortunately. What we are promised is that God will use everything that happens to us for our good. The good and the bad things he will use together to shape us for the future. And he compares it in the Bible to refining us like gold. For gold to be refined, it must pass through fire. And the impurities rise to the top and they're scooped off. And fine gold is refined many times. So something I was reading about gold this week that really interested me. You know, when gold isn't refined, it's not worth very much because it's got loads of impurities in it. And you know what gives the gold its color? It's the impurities. So that's why white gold is more expensive than yellow gold, if you're down the jeweler's, men, anytime getting something for your wives or girlfriends. White gold is more expensive than yellow gold because it's got fewer impurities in it. And did you know that technically, and it's only been proved in the last few years, if you can refine gold enough, it becomes see-through. All of the color can be removed from gold, from yellow to white to see-through. It's transparent. Perfect gold will be transparent. Anyone remember the words of Revelation 21? See, God already knew what pure gold looked like. He already knows what you guys are going to look like, purified and presented to him as a perfect bride. Revelation 21 says, "The walls of the New Jerusalem were pure gold like clear glass." Isn't that amazing? God knew your ultimate destiny. He knows your ultimate destiny. says the streets were pure gold, like clear glass. And up until about 10 years ago, I think it was, we thought, oh, that doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? How can gold be clear? That kind of purity is what God is trying to achieve in our lives. It's what God is doing in each one of us. He's changing us from glory to glory through trial, through testing, through hard times. We're being purified little by little because his plan is far bigger than we can ever imagine. The L in the word plan is for God's love, because that's what really motivates God. It's what drives God always to come for us, to never give up on us, to be relentless in pursuing us. Whatever we've done, whatever we've felt, however, whatever obstacle or lie the devil has put in our way as part of spiritual warfare, God's love shines through all of it. Every single thing that God brings into our path is out of his great love for us. It's because he will not give up on you, on transforming you. God's plan for our life was fashioned for our benefit and for his glory. The things that he tells us to do, the things that he shows us, the people he puts in our life. It's for our benefit and his glory, and the two can't be separated. It always benefits us to glorify God. And so every prayer was designed for our benefit. God even knows what we need before we ask him. Have you ever thought about that? Have you ever thought to yourself, praying seems a bit pointless sometimes? Prayer isn't to change God's mind, it's to change us. Prayer has a purpose. It develops our trust in him. It means that we are positioning ourselves as children who need our Father to answer our requests. He already knows our tomorrows because he fashioned it for us. And the purpose of prayer isn't for God's benefit, it's for ours. It opens our hearts and opens our eyes to God's majesty and God's purpose. And God's blessing. You know, the closest I feel to God isn't on a Sunday morning in church, actually. We've all got different places. It isn't when I feel closest to God. It's not in church sometimes. The closest I feel to God is standing in a field with no one else around. Or maybe one other person at a push. But looking at creation and looking at the splendor and the grandeur of creation, and thinking that that's just something God made to show his glory and to benefit me. That's all that he did it for. And the amount of detail that he's put into it is just mind-blowing. It's absolutely mind-blowing what God has done in creation. And it's in those circumstances that I'm able to bring my concerns to him, when I'm able to really pour out my heart. And it's in those circumstances that I can be confident that he hears me, that he's interested in what I've got to say. Because prayer aligns me to him. I just feel closer to him when I pray. And I know that God's will was designed for me and fashioned out of his great love. And it's a certainty that you need and you can only get in the close presence of God. That's why with everything that I say from the front here, I will say pursue intimacy with God above everything else. However it happens for you, pursue intimacy. Be different for different people. It'll look differently. I can't always tell you how to do it. But I do know that when you're close to God, everything changes. Your perspective, your hopes, your desires. And when you get this confidence of God's great love for you, that's the best and most powerful weapon you've got when the enemy comes and lies to you. It's also important to understand that God will never ask you to go where he's never been. That God isn't someone that is demanding and strict with you. That he goes before you. You will never bear what God has already borne. You know, in Lamentations, there's a little prophecy of Christ's suffering. And it says, he says to those who feel their burden is too heavy, he says, behold and see if there is any sorrow like my sorrow. which has been brought upon me, which the Lord has inflicted in the day of his fierce anger. See, Jesus didn't only suffer and feel pain in the same way that we do, but he chose to do it for us on our behalf. The wrath of God fell on Jesus on the cross. The wrath of God that sin brings, the imperfections, the mistakes that we make, the people that we hurt, the things that we do and the things that we don't do. If we belong to Christ, we will never suffer the wrath of God. Because Jesus took all that for us and he demonstrated his great love for us. Because God's plan is perfect and planned out to the exact moment, we know that there are no accidents. If there was any other way to get the benefit in our lives, God would do it. So trials, I believe that trials are brought into my life because there's no other way to accomplish my perfection. That God means good in everything, even the trials. And I know that God would never ask me to do something that he hasn't done himself. And I know that he protects me from the effects of evil. Because it's only in the center of God's will that I can have complete confidence that God goes before me. God's plan is full of love. The next one is A, P-L-A. The plan is full of love. We've got to remember God's authority. Sometimes we focus very much on, I am a friend of God. But we've got to remember God's authority. Because he's the supreme authority, he's in total control. The Bible does say that Satan is the god of this world. But I want you to go and have a look at that specifically, because the god is a small g. It's important, that is. That doesn't supersede God's authority. Satan is the god of this world only in the sense that he's able to influence us and influence our thoughts. Small g for God. You know, God told Moses that he would make him a god unto Pharaoh. Pharaoh would believe that Moses was a god. That was a small g. Moses was never a god, but he was used as a tool for God's purpose. In the same way, Satan is used as a tool for God's purpose. Though he despises God, God will use him to fulfill his purpose because he is in charge. He has complete authority. He has complete control. Now, you could have loads of different biblical, I'm not just going to assert that. There's loads of biblical examples. I just picked one, 1 Kings 22. And it's talking about Ahab. And the Lord said, who will persuade Ahab to go up that he may fall at Ramoth Gilead? See, God wanted someone to go and tell his enemy to do something that would be a bad idea. And it says, so one spoke in this manner and another spoke in that manner. And then a spirit came forward and stood before the Lord and said, I will persuade him. And the Lord said, in what way? And so he said, I will go out and be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets. And the Lord says, okay, you shall persuade him and also prevail. Go out and do it. See, God directs all that goes on. We see the judgment of God on Ahab. Ahab was a wicked and idolatrous king over Israel. And his judgment from God was to go and be slain in battle. And God used an evil spirit to speak through the false prophets that Ahab consulted. See how it can get confusing, can't it? But we see loads of other examples. And those who credit Satan with the authority of this world should listen to the words of Nebuchadnezzar. Remember him? Remember what happened to him when he got proud? He walked out onto his balcony and he looked over his whole empire. And he said, look what I have done. Uh-oh. Look what I have done, he said. And God's judgment was swift, wasn't it? How many years? I can't remember off the top of my head. 7 years. Because he wouldn't acknowledge the sovereignty of God. He was stripped of his kingdom. He was stripped of all of his riches. He was stripped of all of the people that esteemed him. He was stripped of all of his basic means of living. Everything was taken away from him. Because he thought he was doing it. But after a time, his judgment returned, didn't it? Do you remember how he came back into sanity, I suppose? He says, I lifted my eyes to heaven and blessed the Most High. and praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion. He does according to his will. No one can restrain his hand or say to him, what have you done? See, Nebuchadnezzar had a real idea of who God was after the trouble that he went through. No one can restrain his hand or question what he does. All authority belongs to God. You know, even evil rulers are handpicked by God. It's difficult to get a head around that sometimes, isn't it? I know I'm not going to get very political, but look at the situation in this country. Look at the situation in America. Many Christians, including myself, are confused about President Trump. Doesn't seem Christian, does he? But God said of rulers he raised up, specifically the Pharaoh, he says, for this very purpose I have raised you up, that I may show my power in you and that my name may be declared in all the earth. He did that for Pharaoh. Wonder what he's doing through President Trump. Because it's because God allowed him. Has he allowed the president before him and the president before him? This is why God instructs us to obey those who rule over us. Because we don't get to decide whether we're going to give our backing or not give our backing. God says, trust me. God says they've been appointed by me. You just have to trust my purposes. Jesus knew that in his trial with Pilate. Here's another example. He says, do you not know that I have, this is Pilate. Okay. Had a bit of Nebuchadnezzar's spiritual disease on him. And he says to Jesus, do you not know that I have the power to crucify you or let you go? Can you imagine standing before the creator of the world, having such cheek? Do you not know I have the power to crucify or release you? And Jesus answered him, he says, you've got no power at all against me unless it's been given you from above. Even in that situation, as Jesus knew what was coming, Jesus was acknowledging God's authority and sovereignty. God uses his enemies to fulfill his plan. P for plan, L for love, A for authority. The last one is neglecting the call. We can neglect the call of God. Knowing that God's in total control means that we have to walk by faith and not by sight. It means we have to learn to trust God in everything. Many people live their entire lives by sight alone. They don't have the faith to trust God's plan. So they only respond by what makes them feel good for the moment. Now we might refuse to follow God's call because they're afraid of missing out. We might do it for all kinds of reasons because we want to be the one in control. We might just respond to what we see. We might stray from God. The people that do that can't endure trials because they don't believe God can bring good out of it. They take matters into their own hands. They can't see the result. They want to be in control. But it's not until God is in control that he can lead us. It's not until we willingly ask him, God, I surrender my ideas. I surrender my plans. I surrender my thoughts and wishes about how I should behave to this person, about how I should do this and that and the other. I've got to surrender. It's not until God is in control that he can lead us. You can't follow God if you're in front. You've got to allow God to go ahead of you. You can't follow God if you bail out each time you struggle. But without faith, it is impossible to please God. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Until you have faith in God and you're willing to follow him wherever he leads, you won't have that victory and lead that victorious life that God has laid out for you, a plan to see you prosper, to see you blessed in every area of your life. When we pursue God, we'll always be satisfied. When we can get our eyes off the flesh and we can pursue the unseen things, so hard to do sometimes. But when we pursue the unseen things, we're going to be satisfied with both. God will provide all that we need in the physical. But when we pursue physical satisfaction, when we neglect God's calling, that's when we lack direction and purpose. When we have no aims, when we're kind of thinking, well, what comes next? Is next week going to be the same as this week? Is it just going to be the same old, same old, same old? I don't want that kind of life. It's too short, isn't it? It's too short. In the Old Testament, God was continually warning the people of Israel to seek help from him and not the world. And every time they drifted away from God, he would patiently call upon them to restore their relationship. And he would begin to just reach out to them.